Hello and welcome to episode 13 of Track, a podcast for runners. At Track, our aim is to shine a light on the UK running club scene. This podcast is dedicated to and centred upon the committed club runner, the committed amateur. Once again, I'm joined by Kat, Robbie, and we're also joined by George Beardmore again. On this week's episode, we will discuss the latest news that there will be an Olympic Trials marathon race in March in Kew Gardens. We have the inaugural Track Awards, and we also have an interview with marathon runner and Cardiff AC athlete Josh Lund. First of all, George, Robbie, how are you guys doing? Maybe George, you first.
Yeah, all good, thank you. Yeah, just usual routine, training. Yeah, lockdown's not affected me too much, so yeah, all going well.
Yeah, well, we've been all watching your Strava and your training you've been doing. Are there a couple of sessions that you've done recently that have gone well that you could talk us through?
On Saturday, I did a fartlek on the grass, which is quite tough. So 1 minute, 3 minutes, 5, 7, 7, 5, 3, 1, all off 2 minute float. So doing the reps at about 5:15s and the floats at 6 minute miling, which was a good session. And then some hill reps after that as well. Do quite a lot of grass sessions over the winter, particularly with the track out of use. So that was a good one. And then I think on the last Thursday, I did a long, steady tempo run. So did 10-mile progression, like from about 6:15s down to about 5:30-minute miling. So they're my two most recent sessions. Pretty good ones.
How much of has Loughborough's training been adapted to the lack of cross-country season, George? Or is it just kind of exactly like normal winter training, but without the races?
Pretty much normal, really. I think the general schedule for previous years was focused on racing too much. This side of Christmas, a lot of people did the Liverpool Cross Challenge, which was normally European cross-country trials or world cross-country trials. So yeah, the training's been pretty similar, really. But lots of high mileage, whether you're middle distance runner or a long distance runner, just the base winter mileage. So not too much difference, really.
And how are you feeling about the lack of races, sort of combination of just kind of training for just to kind of be fit, watch what's on the horizon?
Yeah, I quite like it. Quite a few people have said that they find they've not had as much motivation this term in Loughborough. But for me, I've always just loved like running mileage, really, to be honest, high mileage, and races get in the way of that as much as anything. So I think I've almost enjoyed it more, weirdly. I mean, I still want to race, obviously, because you want to get the times that you think your training's deserved. But I've just enjoyed, yeah, training hard, Sunday long runs, all that sort of stuff.
Is there a race at the end of this, George? Have you got one kind of eyed up for after Christmas or spring?
So I fancy something a bit longer because of, yeah, the type of training I've been doing. So I did see the podium half marathon suggestion in February. I don't know whether I'll be able to get into it, but something like that would be ideal. I think maybe something a bit longer.
How about you, Robbie? How's your training been?
Yeah, it's going pretty well, really, last few weeks. So got a bit of consistency in terms of the mileage, doing about 60, 65 a week, and combined with one session and one long hilly run, which I'm using as a session a week, which is working pretty well for me. Legs are feeling a bit less battered after the long run on the kind of trail. So even though you get the hills, you're kind of not pounding the concrete. So yes, feeling pretty good, really.
And Kat, how about you? How have you been?
Yeah, so I think on the last episode, we talked about me going back to work on the COVID ward. Spent a week back on the COVID ward before I developed symptoms and then tested positive for COVID on Wednesday. So not done much running at all since the last episode. I think I was on track to finally get up to, I've been building up really steadily, quite proud of my graph on Strava, moving up slowly and not doing anything stupid. I was due to hit 30 miles that week and keep going. But yes, I started to feel unwell on the Monday and probably a little on the Sunday because I ditched my run that day. And yeah, now I've got to start back at the bottom again.
And how has the isolation been?
Yeah, pretty boring. I'm starting to tidy each room from top to bottom. And so up until today, I was starting to feel better again and get on and get stuff done. And then today I spiked high temperature again and feeling a bit rough.
Did the hospital kind of just plan for you all to get it at some point if you're working on the COVID ward?
Well, I don't know. I think most of the time we manage to avoid getting it. I think healthcare workers do get it more than most people because of the exposure, but I think a lot of the time the PPE works, and that's why I'm not completely convinced I got it from work. But you know, it could be, I think a lot of kids have got it at the moment and they don't show any symptoms, so you know, having two kids at schools probably is higher risk than working at the hospital.
Hope you feel better soon, Kat, and hopefully you're back out running soon. And
what's going on with you, Ben, and how's the training going?
Yeah, all good, thanks. Just as George was saying, really similar to George, just trying to get some good base miles in. Nothing too fancy, just yeah, lots of easy running, a session or two a week.
Your mileage last week, do you know what it was?
Around 100, wasn't it?
99.5. how are you so disciplined that you don't go out for that last half a mile in the afternoon on Sunday?
Well, I don't want to overdo it. I don't want to overtrain. No, to be fair, all of my Strava's in kilometres. So I saw I'd done 160 kilometres.
Oh, okay. All right.
So I didn't, I didn't.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Well, as I was saying, there's not been a huge amount of races going on. So we don't really have a race news section this week. The Delhi Half Marathon did take place in India, and we had two Ethiopian athletes who won that. But really, particularly in the UK, no real race news to talk about. So what we're going to do, we're going to sort of move on to the news section this week. And really the main focus on this episode is that there will be an Olympic trials marathon taking place in March in Kew Gardens as a selection race for the Tokyo Olympics, which are now going to take place in August next year. This information is from Athletics Weekly and also from fastrunning.com. The British Olympic Marathon contenders will battle for places in the team for Tokyo on what's been described as a flat and fast course at Kew Gardens in Richmond, southwest London. The trials race will take place on a Friday morning, March the 26th, and it will be as part of the Richmond Run Fest weekend. And they actually highlighted this as one of the reasons that they went for this location, the fact they could integrate it into an existing running festival. The course has been described as a 5.5K loop that does not have any significant elevations, is sheltered from the wind, and is believed to be fast enough athletes to hit the Olympic qualifying marks, which are 2:11:30 for the men and 2:29:30 for the women. The Olympic Marathon Trials event will be staged in a similar fashion to what we spoke about, that the London Marathon took place in October. So athletes being held in a bubble, small fields of around 30 men and 30 women in separate races. It's understood that other places were considered for the event. So places such as Lake Dorney in Buckinghamshire, which we've seen put on races the last few months. Also, various motor racing and horse racing courses were considered. As we said, the appeal of Kew Garden was that it could be incorporated into an already established event, and also the fact that it's a closed off venue, essentially a walled venue, so people wouldn't be able to wander in and out. Now, there was quite a lot of response and reaction to this, and the race director, Tom Bedford, sort of came out and sort of defended the decision for it to be held at Kew Gardens. And his argument regarding the course was that it's one third flatter than the St. James's Park London Marathon, which took place in October. He says it's 20% flatter than the normal London Marathon course. And this was off the back of some suggestion that because of the number of turns and potentially tight turns and narrow paths at Kew Gardens, that would be difficult for fast times to be run. So Tom Bedford went on to say that there are 8 turns every 5.5K loop, and most are very easy. It's only got 121 metres over the whole 26.2 miles. And he said, I'll not even say it's the final course, as we're constantly getting feedback and talking to athletes and coaches. So between now and March, there may be some changing or amendments to the actual course. Essentially, what an athlete will need to do, they have to be in the top two in order to qualify, and they also need to hit that qualifying mark. And the last thing I'll say on this is that it's be the first time in 40 years that there's been a British Olympic marathon trial. The last time was in 1980 for the Moscow Olympics, and there was a marathon trial which took place in Milton Keynes, and that was won by Ian Thompson in 2:14. George, I'll come to you first. What do you think?
Yeah, pretty excited about it. I've always enjoyed watching the US marathon trials and wondered whether GB could do something similar. I think it's maybe sort of problem with it is sometimes it can throw up unusual results. I think the US, just the nature of the marathon, I think the US Olympic trials this year, but there are a few names that weren't expected, and maybe if the US team had the choice, they'd pick someone else. But I suppose you got perform well on the day. That's part of it. So yeah, I think pretty exciting news. A bit weird that they've gone for a course that isn't that popular with the athletes, but plenty of reasons behind it. So yeah, pretty excited all in all.
Yeah, I would agree. It'll be exciting as a spectator to watch. I suppose just from some of the reaction, you hope it's a course that will allow for good racing, and you hope that it won't just be talking points about people slipping or tripping over, or they're being too bunched on the corners. What do you think, Robbie?
Well, I was similar to George, really. I thought it was really exciting. I wasn't really aware of any kind of negative feedback until I read your kind of prep for tonight. So you've obviously pulled it together from social media and whatnot. Is the American Olympic trials, is that time-based, or is that just the first three over the line?
I think it's just first three. I've never heard them say anything about, oh, this person finished third, but they haven't got a standard.
Yeah.
It must just be.
They did it on a really tough course this year, didn't they? So I don't think they do it on a tough course but like you say, maybe the field is so deep that they actually just kind of presume that people are kind of going to get inside that comfortably. I'm not sure.
Some of the reaction, Robbie, was there were a few things actually. So as I said, the course itself was a bit of a talking point. So it being narrow paths, lots of bends and some quite tight bends. The other potential reaction from some of the coaches and some of the athletes via their coaches, uncertainty about what you would have to do in order to get an invitation. So what I'd have to run, are my athletes eligible to get an invite to run? There seemed to be a bit of murkiness or not much clarity around that at the given time of the announcement. And also there was apparently a consultation that took place prior to the announcement. But again, I think there was some reaction that suggested not everyone who would have liked to be involved in that consultation was actually invited.
Right.
So I think there were a few things. However, it seems to have died down a little bit in terms of the negative sort of responses, at least that are visible on things like social media and whatnot.
Proof is going to be in the pudding, isn't it, after if it kind of falls flat or people don't hit the qualifying times or the corners are too tight, or, you know, they're kind of putting themselves in the spotlight. And Tom Bedford is obviously is kind of setting himself up to be criticised if it doesn't kind of go as planned. So he's obviously confident that it's going to produce you know, a good spectacle and some fast times. You must have run there before, Ben, around Kew Gardens.
No, I've been to the Christmas light show at Kew Gardens, but I never run around it. One of the coaches that was quite vocal was Andrew Hobdill, and he's coach of Tom Evans and George, also coach of Frank Baddick, I believe. Potentially does some work with Stephen Scullion and Kevin Seaward, amongst others. But he was quite vocal about it on Twitter, and then I think he was invited to go and look at the course. And I think he took Tom Evans with him, or Tom Evans went with him. And he posted quite a few pictures on his Instagram story of the course and of the turns without comment, really. So I don't know if he was happy about that or not. What do you think, Kat?
Yeah, it's interesting that they've gone for an early start again after what happened at London. It'd be interesting to see if it's the women's race again that takes the brunt of that early start. March is still fairly bad weather-wise, so I don't know why they wouldn't go for a later start after what happened.
Yeah, so I've heard 7:30-ish. It's also on the Friday, which makes it think that will people be able to watch it as much as they'd like to, the people at work and what have you?
I presume that's Good Friday.
I don't know. Is it a good... is it a bank holiday, maybe?
I just presume so, seeing it. I mean, otherwise, it's an outlandish idea to do it on a work day, isn't it? But
I've just Googled it. Good Friday is the 2nd of April, so...
No way.
Yeah.
Outlandish it is.
Outlandish it is, there you go. It's an outlandish early morning Friday start.
So who has the times currently? On the men's side of things, we have Mo Farah, who has run 2:05, Callum Hawkins, who's run 2:08, Johnny Meller, who's run 2:10:03, and Ben Connor. So we've got four male athletes. On the women's side of things, not quite as clear. So currently, there are no females who have run the Olympic marathon qualifying time, as I understand it. Jess Piasecki has run 2:25, Charlotte Perdue 2:25, Steph 12, and Steph Davis. But that was all in 2019. So we'll see what happens there and if they are stringent with those rules. So currently, as it stands, within those current guidelines, no females would be eligible for the games. What do you think to that, George?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully a couple of those names can run it at the trials. Disappointing, yeah, to have no one go, considering they are. Women's marathon running is pretty good at the moment. It'd be very disappointing to have no one there.
So, I don't know if any of you guys saw Paul Martelletti release a short video on his Instagram/Twitter, and he sort of went through the male contenders or potential athletes who may be involved based upon a 2:19 marathon previously and an equivalent half marathon time. And he quite quickly, he said, got to about 35 to 40 men who would be potentially eligible to be invited to the trials. Suppose we will wait and see. I think it's half exciting and you just hope it's a good course and one that works out. So we're talking about a great race and great performances.
Let's just wait and see kind of how it all pans out. I'm still trying to get my head around it being on a Friday morning.
Well, the big seller, they kept saying, and I wasn't quite sure why it was such a big seller, was that they could incorporate it into the Richmond Run Festival, which is that weekend. So I think they have a 10K and other races scheduled for the Saturday and the Sunday, potentially. I wasn't quite sure why that was such a big selling point, that you could incorporate it to another event. I think the suggestion is they're quite sure, because of the location and because of the infrastructure of that other event going on, that it's not going to be cancelled. That's as much as I could take from it.
I thought that, I mean, you'd have thought they'd have wanted to separate it from other events, really, and get it on, you know, like you say, get it onto a racetrack somewhere, or and then you could just have it starting in the middle of the day. And it just seems a strange time to do it when you've got all of that time to prepare it and you end up doing it at 7:30 on a Friday.
George, as you mentioned, and another something to look forward to potentially, is that there might be a half marathon from the podium guys again in Feb.
Yeah, and I think I saw today as well on Facebook that they're debating doing a 5K. I think it was the 26th or 27th they were.
Yeah, you're right. So podium half marathon potentially in Feb. No more information on that just yet. The podium cross country we've spoken about a lot is still scheduled. Waiting for the council to sign off on it. And as you said, also podium 5K, hopefully sometime between Christmas and New Year. Well, we're talking about races. There was, obviously, with this current lockdown coming to an end, there was an announcement about what will happen to races post-lockdown. As the English lockdown prepares to be lifted, endurance athletes are poised to race again in December. So there is going to be some return to competition, hopefully next month. The restrictions lifted on December the 2nd. England Athletics has updated its guidance with road, cross-country, trail and mountain running allowed to resume, but obviously with restrictions. Now, some of the suggested events which are going to take place in December include Trafford AC staging an open meeting on December the 5th. There also may be some other track events taking place in Middlesbrough, Hexham. And there's also been some green lights for some cross-country fixtures to take place in December and January from UK Athletics. And events company like Run Through are continuing to put on a host of races in places like Cheshire, Clapham Common, Goodwood Motor Circuit. And that's going to be having a marathon, half marathon and some other events on December the 5th and 6th, as well as some events at Olympic Park in London. Run Nation is another company hoping to put some events on in December. And I've just seen today that there will be a Wolverton 5K at Willin Lake in Milton Keynes that George and I have been to quite recently a couple of times. So hopefully some races taking place in December. So what we're going to do now, we're going to go on to the Track Awards for 2020. We have UK Male Athlete of the Year Award, UK Female Athlete of the Year, UK Young Athlete of the Year, and we've gone for under 23s for that category. We've also got an Overseas Athlete of the Year, and the last couple are Race of the Year, Track Interview of the Year, and finally we have a Drugs Whereabouts Story of the Year to award as well. So we're just going to run through our main contenders, and then we've put all these categories to a vote for the four of us, and we're going to award someone for each of the categories. So Robbie, you are going to take the first one, UK Male Athlete of the Year.
Yeah, this is all very exciting, isn't it, Ben? Good of you to get dressed up in a tuxedo for the occasion as well.
Yeah, thanks for noticing, Robbie.
Yeah, it's all right. So UK Male Athlete of the Year. So we've got some, obviously, some great contenders for this. Let's start with Jake Smith. Jake kind of raised his profile with a 28-minute dead on 10,000-meter time trial during lockdown. Kind of went kind of big on social media and got people talking. And then in the last couple of months, he's had a couple of standout performances. So 5,000-meter PB of 13:47 at the British Champs in September. Then an amazing performance to break his own under 23 half marathon British record to run 60:31 Gdynia in the World Half Marathon Championships. And it was one of those stories that almost kind of breached the running news and actually became kind of mainstream news on the news outlets, which shows how standout it was and a brilliant reaction on the tape from him. Second, we have Jake Whiteman. So Jake Whiteman won the podium 5K in March in 14:30. He's gone sub 145 or below three times for the 800 in the summer autumn season, around 144 twice. He ran the second quickest 1500 meter British time in history in Monaco in 3:29:47, which is his standout performance of the year. Some would say the standout British performance of the year. Only Mo Farah has run a quicker 1500 meters, which is also in Monaco. So Jake Whiteman has run faster than Kram and Ovett over that distance. We have Daniel Rowden. So Daniel Rowden's come back from a long-term injury and raced for the first time in 2 years this year, coming off a kind of post-operation. And he won the British Champs in 1:45.94 ahead of Jake Whiteman, just a short time after Jake Whiteman's kind of impressive performance in Monaco. He's also ran 1:44.74 and 1:44.09 this season. Next, we have Mo Farah. So Mo's kind of standout really was his world record in the hour track record in September. Kind of showed what a competitor he is. 21,330 meters in the space of an hour. He also won the Antrim half marathon ahead of a competitive field in 60:27 in September. And finally, of the kind of five standouts is Mark Scott. So Mark's had a great year, broke the British 5K record at the podium 5K in August in the time of 13:20, ran the quickest indoor 5,000 metres from a British athlete of all time in 13:08 in Boston in February, won the 5,000 metres in the British Champs in 13:32, and then ran a really impressive debut in the half marathon. And came second to Mo at Antrim, just behind in 60:39, which shows his class overall distances. Other kind of notables that are worth talking about. Obviously, there are absolutely loads out there. But Ben Connor, with a absolutely brilliant debut in London for the marathon, and ran a 2:11. Johnny Meller, who's ran two superb marathon times, 2:10 in Seville and 2:10 in London. And I believe he is lined up as an interviewee with George over the next few weeks, which is going to be absolutely brilliant. And then just to be controversial, Stephen Scullion, is he British? Or I know this raised debates over the coverage he got in after London, but probably worth a mention. Even though he's obviously running for Ireland, he's ran the fastest Irish half marathon time ever at Antrim, and then followed that up with a superb sub 2:10. In London to run a 2:09. So the votes have been cast. Kat voted for Jake Smith. George voted for Jake Whiteman, so one vote each. And then with the winner with two votes, Mark Scott. So congratulations, Mark. Expect to see him on the next episode of the podcast to collect his trophy.
Thanks, Robbie. Okay, so Mark Scott is our UK Male Athlete of the Year. Kat, do you want to talk through the UK Female Athlete of the Year?
Five. Nominees for this. The first obvious one, Laura Muir, set a 1,000-meter British record in August and also ran a world-leading time over 1,500 meters of 3 minutes 57:40 in Berlin. Next up, we've got Laura Waitman. She had short season of 8 races over 6 weeks and got 3 PBs, 1500 metres. She got really close to going sub 4 minutes for that. 5000 metre PB of 14:35. And also the 5K, we all watched her in the last 5K, really strong performance, and she did her road PB of 15:10. She also won the British Champs 1500 metres, so yeah, all around really good season from her. Next up we have Amy Pratt, who we've all really enjoyed watching this season. 5 PBs over the season, so really good season from her. A world leading time on the 3000 metre steeplechase. She also came 5th in the 800 metres final at the British Champs on the same day as that. So yeah, really good season from her. Gemma Reekie, she's been living with Laura Muir and they're pushing each other on nicely. So she ran an indoor 800 metre lead earlier in the season. She ran an outdoor PB and she ran the indoor of 157.9. She also got a British under 23 record. So Lily Partridge, she's had a really, really good season. 2 wins in the big half and in the Antrim Coast half marathon. So 2 really big wins there. Unfortunately, didn't finish at London, but would have been really good to see that. So we had a vote on it. Me, George and Ben all voted for Laura Waitman, and then just Robbie, having to be different, has gone for Laura. Yeah.
Thanks, Kat. So Laura Waitman has won our UK Female Athlete of the Year. So congratulations. I'm sure they'll all be chuffed when they hear this news. George, UK Young Athlete of the Year.
Jake Smith and Gemma Reekie are both under 23, but since they're up for the main award, I've not included them in the under 20 of the young athlete category. So first we got Josh Lay, who was an under 20 for cross country and road, under 23 on the track. So he finished 2nd at the under 20 nationals cross country. He ran 13:55 at Armagh 5K, which was the 2nd fastest UK under 20 of all time. He ran 1:46.78 for the 800. That was a PB. And 3:36.92 for the 1500. That was also a PB. He came 3rd at the British Champs 1500 metres. Piers Copeland's an under 23. So he ran 1:46.24 and 3:35.32 and got a bronze medal indoors for British Champs 800 metres. George Mills, also under 23. He won both the British Andoors and British Outdoors 1500s. And he ran a PB of 3:36.72 this year. Amelia Quirk, she's an under 20 and she won Nationals under 20 cross country and then got a bronze medal at the British Champs 5,000 metres. Keely Hodgkinson, she's an under 20 and she set a new under 20 European 800 metre indoor record of 201.16 in February. And she won the British Indoors and British Outdoors 800 metre titles. Ran an 800 metre PB of 201.73, which was the 5th fastest UK this year and 4th fastest UK under 20 of all time. And then finally, we've got Max Bergen, who didn't race that much this year, but when he raced very well. And he ran a new under 20 European 800 metre record of 1:44.75. And the votes, we got 1 vote for Josh Lay, 1 for Amelia Quirk, and then Keely Hodgkinson, the winner, with 2 votes.
Thanks, George. So, yeah, Keely Hodgkinson took the UK Young Athlete of the Year this year from us. So, well done. So, I'm going to take the Overseas Athlete of the Year, and what we've done here, similar to the Young Athlete of the Year, we've combined males and females. So, I'll just fly through some of the contenders. So, on the female side, we had Gide from Ethiopia. We had Sifan Hassan. We had Paris Chepchechir, Bridget Koskay, Faith Kipyegon, and Shelby Houlihan. On the male side of things, we spoke about Joshua Cheptegei, obviously. We spoke about Timothy Cheruiyot, Shura Kitata, Jacob Kiplimo, and Mo Ahmed. So just quickly to touch upon Mo Ahmed and Shelby Houlihan, they were on the list just because of the way that I suppose the whole Bowerman Track Club attacked the sort of lockdown period and put on some really good events and ran some really quick times. So, for example, Mohamed ran a 12:47 in the 5,000 metres, 10th on the world all-time list, and smashing his own Canadian record. So that was pretty good to watch, and I know we were all tuning into that. Other standout performances from that list. So Peres Chepchichir from Kenya in the female side of things. She won the world half marathon title in Poland, but she also twice broke the world half marathon record for the women only race with 2:65 minute half marathons. And obviously Zafan Hassan, who set a world record in the 1 hour run, set a European record over the 10,000 meters, which is also the fourth fastest time in history with a 29:36. I suppose that the one name that we kept talking about was Joshua Cheptegei, and he broke world records at the 5,000 meters, the 10,000 meters, and 5K on the road. He was also fourth at the World Athletics Half Marathon Champs in his debut over the distance. But this was a 3-1 victory for Joshua Cheptegei. So Kat, George, and Robbie all voted for Joshua Cheptegei. So Joshua Cheptegei, you have won the Overseas Athlete of the Year for the Track 2020 Awards. Let's move on. What else do we have? Is Race of the Year, and George, you are taking this one.
So we haven't got the world records of Cheptegei and Gidey. We decided they weren't particularly good races for various reasons. So the races we have nominated, first is Armagh back in February. I forget that this is actually this year, but it is. Adam Clark won in 13:42, but the reason this is nominated is the depth is ridiculous. 140 men broke 15 minutes, which for a UK road race is pretty ridiculous. And then Anna Emily Moller of Denmark and also St Mary's Uni won the women's 3K in 8:58, where 52 women broke 10 minutes. But the live stream was pretty shocking. So if you wanted to watch it, it was a shaky camera on a bike and nothing better. And then big gap to August with the podium 5K. Mark Scott broke the British record, as you said. He ran 13:20. Alex Yee also broke the previous record with 13:27. 12 men broke 14 and 47 men broke 15. Now on the women's side, Beth Potter ran the fifth fastest UK of all time, 15:24. And the coverage of this was pretty good. So it was a good race to watch as well. The Monaco Diamond League 1500 metres in August was where Jake Whiteman ran the second fastest time by Brit with 3:29:47. But the race ahead of him was pretty good as well. Timothy Cheruiyot won in 3:28:45, and Jacob Ingebrigtsen set a new European record of 3:28:68. Then the Stockholm Women's Diamond League 1500 metres was a British 1:23, which is pretty good to see the strength and depth of women's middle distance running. So Laura Muir won in 3:57, and Laura Waitman in 4:01, and Melissa Courtney Bryant also 4:01. Men's British champs 800 metres in September was Dan Rowden's. We've already mentioned it, but beating Jake Whiteman down the home straight, very impressive after such a long time without racing. So he won in 1:45, Jake Whiteman 1:46, and then a PB for Yusuf Bizimana in 1:47. And then the London Marathon in October, so Bridgie Crossguy won. She was winning, well, won comfortably, 3 minutes ahead of second. The finish for second was exciting. So Sarah Hall, with a ridiculous last 200 metres to come from a long way back to beat Ruth Chepin-Getich. Hall set a 15-second PB, 2:22. And Natasha Cochran won the British title, running 2:33:19. Now, on the men's race, Bekele pulled out, so everyone was expecting a comfortable Kipchoge win, but it was far from it. Probably made it more exciting, as it was a three-way sprint finish. Shura Katata won ahead of Vincent Kipchumba and Sisse Lemmet. Katata's winning time was 2:05:41, 1 second ahead of Kipchumba. And as we mentioned, Stephen Scullion, Johnny Meller, and Ben Connor all ran great races as well. And then last, the World Half Marathon in October. This was the women's only world record by Peres Chepchichir, 65:16. And it was the first time in history that top six finishes in the women's race broke 66 minutes. The British women's team came 15th, so not best showing by them, but some good performances. 71.53 for Samantha Harrison, 73.08 for Becky Briggs and Clara Evans, 73.11. And then the men's race, it was gold by Ugandan for the first time in the World Half Marathon. But it wasn't Cheptegei as people expected. It was teenager Jacob Kiplimo who broke the championship record and the Ugandan record, 58.49. And as we mentioned, Jake Smith with an amazing run to run 60.31 and go third all time behind Farah and Hawkins. The votes for this one, I voted for Monaco. Cap voted for Stockholm Diamond League, but podium won with two votes from Robbie and Ben.
Yeah, so a podium 5K winner there for our race of the year. Thanks, George. Robbie, this was your category here. Best whereabouts excuse of the year. So something we've spoken about seemingly every episode, the newest excuses put out by athletes when they have missed multiple drug tests. So who won that one?
To the nominees for the best whereabouts excuse of the year. So first of all, we've got Patrick Steele. Patrick was actually seen hurdling a fence, I'd like to think in a kind of steeplechasing kind of way, preferably with his spikes and his short shorts on, as he kind of ran away from the testers. There is actually a quote in the report that I read about him that actually described him as sprinting away. Thought of this kind of athlete sprinting away off into the distance to escape what was going to be obviously a positive drugs test, potentially, allegedly. So Patrick got one vote, that was my vote. Chris Coleman got one vote, so this is probably the most high-profile bust of the year. Chris kind of went to kind of great lengths about his excuse when he was, he basically nipped out to do a bit of Christmas shopping and got really pissed off that they didn't actually call him and kind of get him back from the shops to say that they were kind of knocking on his door. Fortunately, Chris got came across more of a lie when it was came out that he physically couldn't have been doing what he was doing in the time he said he was doing it. Menangoy was one we spoke about last week, so he actually had a couple of excuses that we could have put in. One was got stuck in a traffic jam at 4 a.m. on the busy back roads of wherever he was working, which again raised questions because he was doing a night shift for the police, but not quite sure what that was all about. But his excuse that we've gone for is the fact that he lost his house, which were in his luggage, and his luggage got lost on a flight. So he had to go around to a mate's house and therefore just at that time, really unfortunately, missed the testers knocking on his door. But with a whopping two votes, the winner was one from earlier in the year. So this was from May, and it was another really high profile case, and it was Wilson Kipsang, and possibly the highest profile case of any kind of middle or long distance runner. So he was delayed 4 hours by a traffic jam in May. He then submitted a photo of an overturned lorry as evidence, which he must have thought was pretty nailed on to kind of getting him off the hook. But it was actually not from anything that he'd seen with his own eyes, and it was lifted off, I believe it was Facebook, from something that had happened a couple of months later. So Mr. Kipsang had actively found a photo on the internet that he thought would get him off the hook and decided to use that as a way of getting off. And obviously that backfired and led to his possibly the ending of his career. So congratulations, Wilson. You've won the award for best whereabouts excuse of the year. So we'll pop something in the post for you.
Yeah, thanks, Robbie. Well done, Wilson. Yeah, the prize is actually a 52-week calendar. It's a track calendar, so we can keep track of all your whereabouts. So we'll send that in the post, Wilson. Okay, last category, Kat. We finally got there, thank God. It's the category for track interview of the year.
Yeah, so this one was actually quite hard to decide in the end. I listened to a few of the old interviews today and there's some really good ones. I think Samantha Harrison interview was a really great story, really interesting to hear how she had never really run before 2018, so that's a really good one. The John Danahay interview, still one of my favourites. Got so much knowledge of the sport and from an athlete and coaching perspective. So the Aaron Scott interview is really passionate about running in general, and so great listen. all of them really, some really good interviews. But the voting, when I actually voted for the George Beardmore interview on episode one, I think it was really good. I don't know if it's because you two knew each other, but the interview really flowed and it was really interesting to hear about the training at Loughborough and things. Yeah, so I voted for that one. I think Ben voted for Andrew Davies, and the winner was Aaron Scott, who Robbie and George both voted for. So Aaron Scott's the winner of our interview of the year.
Yeah, thanks, Kat. So yeah, so we enjoyed all those interviews. Really nice to actually look back at the list of people we've interviewed and remember those conversations, and hopefully lots more to come. So obviously Josh Lunn is this week, and then we have Ali Dixon coming up next week. And as Robbie said, hopefully a Johnny Miller interview after that as well. But for now, Aaron Scott is the winner of the inaugural Track Award for Interview of the Year. So that concludes the ceremony. Thanks for sticking with it. George, do you just want to introduce the interview this week?
Yeah, so Josh ran the 2020 Elite London Marathon race at St James's Park. So it was interesting to hear like the insight into how the COVID regulations and the Elite Marathon actually ran. His first marathon that he finished. So it was interesting to hear about what went wrong at his previous marathons and how he changed his training. And just a really good chat, and hopefully everyone enjoys it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks, George. Yeah, it was a really good listen. And Josh seems like a really nice guy and very open about his running. So we hope you enjoy the interview, and we'll talk to you soon. Have a good week.
See you later.
Thank you. See ya. This week on Track, we're delighted to be joined by marathon runner Josh Lunn. Josh ran at the 2020 London Marathon Elite Race at St James's Park, finishing in a debut time of 2:17:59, the eighth fastest time in the UK this year. Josh is based in Cardiff and runs for Cardiff AC after previously running for Bedford and County. Thank you for joining us, Josh. How are you?
Oh, good, thanks. Good to be here.
Thank you. As an introduction to the listeners, we normally list off some of your PBs and performances just to give them an idea of your ability. So if any of these are wrong, these are from Power of 10, let me know. 800 metres, 202, 1500 metres, 358, 3K, 836, the 5K, 1443, 10,000 metres, 3021 on the track and 2944 on the road. And then the half marathon, 64:25. And as I said, the London Marathon this year, 2:17:59.
Yeah.
Okay. So from that list of PBs, which time are you most proud of and which time do you want to really improve in the future?
Definitely, I'd say most proud of the half marathon. I was sort of most shocked by that. And I think the one I definitely would like to improve is the 800. There was one year when I ran my 1500 PB, actually I thought I can easily break 2 minutes, and I just really, really can't.
Yeah, I'm the same. My PB 800 meters 204, which compared to my other PBs is not great.
It was like a sprint, like from the start.
I was tired after about 100 meters, and got worse from there. Are there any other performances or races that aren't on that list that are no longer a PB that you're particularly proud of? You got your first England vest earlier this year, is that right?
Yeah, I got my first England vest over the half marathon. I didn't particularly run very well there, to be honest. It was in Spain, Granollers. The course was sort of basically uphill for the first half and then downhill for the sort of second half. And I just found my calves just suffered so much in the first half. I was sort of in limp mode on the way back, really. But it was really good experience. And it was, good to get my first England vest as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I've also seen your Power of 10 that you've run the Worcester Pitchcroft Park Run, which me and Ben know very well. I'm everyone at Worcester.
Used
to win the whole way around every time I've done it.
Was that last Christmas?
New Year's Day.
Yeah, so Jen and I went back to her dad's for Christmas. It must have just been after Christmas last year, maybe New Year. I think we just added it on to the end of a long run. Literally decided sort of, I think, 5 minutes before we left. I should have gone through the park run at the end. So
great. So back to like early days and getting into running. From Power of 10, your first entry on there is in 2007 as an under 17, a cross-country Lincolnshire League fixture. How did you get into running? Did you do other sports growing up?
When I was probably in primary school, I used to do the standard football. I was never really any good. And then I think there's probably a few races before that on Power 10, but nothing sort of major. It was like school races. And then I joined the local club, New Valley Harriers. So it was very much, I would go down. It was more of a social twice a week. You sort of do the session, but you're not really running that hard. And then I sort of had a bit of a break really when I was probably 17, 18. I was very, very sort of on and off. And then I probably, off memory, I would say sort of started a bit more seriously when I was probably 20, 21. And then sort of started to really actually focus on things. But it's more sort of in the last maybe year and a half, 2 years, that I've sort of really sort of seen major benefits from that.
Yeah. So who are your heroes, inspirations? Who are your heroes, inspirations as runner?
Heroes and inspirations, no one, to be honest, really springs to mind, but someone I've always sort of looked up to is someone I now sort of train with, well, probably not train with as much, but when I was younger, who sort of really helped me was Aaron Scott. So he was always sort of locally there. He's much faster sort of than anybody else. And I can remember we sort of used to do sessions, just him and I, and I was always miles and miles behind, but yeah, he's certainly helped me a lot sort of develop. He's the main person I would sort of say look up to.
And from Power of 10, it looks like he started to improve pretty rapidly. Like in 2011, 2012, your 10k PBs went from 36.52 in 2011, then 33.17 in 2012, and 32.20 in 2013. Was that just down to taking it a bit more seriously, or do you always
running? I think.
Yeah.
That's pretty much, yeah. I can remember that 32.20. I think, was that Lincoln?
Yes, yeah.
That I actually couldn't break that for a long, long time for some reason. And no, that was I was quite surprised by that one.
Yeah. And have you always preferred the longer races on the road compared to track and cross country?
Yeah, I think naturally the road sort of comes. So I feel like I'm a bit better at track. I've never sort of been blessed with speed. Probably I can't break 2 minutes 300. But yeah, I think as well, my training at the time, I probably was doing a bit more mileage and probably not doing sort of as much track stuff. So I know certainly when I joined Bedford, everyone was sort of, the natural progression was sort of your 400, 800, 15, and then you did a 5K when you were sort of 20 or so. But I sort of was much more, the 5K was sort of the shortest I was probably doing.
Yeah. So then in October 2019, I believe you decided to jump up to the marathon in Frankfurt, is that right?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
So, what made you want to move up? Was it just like you're saying that you prefer the longer road races?
Yeah, I think every year when London comes around, it's always that buzz to think, oh, I'd really like to do one. And then I paced my friend Mike Channon to 20 miles. So I, the year before, I think 2018, in the autumn, my dad said he'll pay my entry if I did it. So I was like, I don't really want to pay and do it. It's quite expensive. So he paid for my entry and I was like, okay, I'll do it. And because it toyed with the idea, there's like a father and son combined marathon world record. Yeah. So that was always something he wanted to do. In the end, I don't think he actually ran, but I said I'd pace Mike. So I paced him to... was originally agreed with my coaches to halfway, and then I was like, oh, I'll have to keep going, and then ended up being 20 miles. And then I was like, okay, well, I'm definitely going to do one now. I think he ended up running 2:24, and I felt pretty comfortable. I know it was the last 6 miles, but I was like, I mean, I'd like to think I can run sort of low 2:20, maybe even break 2:20. So I thought, yeah, I'll do Frankfurt, and I knew Aaron was going to do it as well. It kind of just made sense to do that one, really.
Yeah. So then you went into the Frankfurt Marathon having run that 64.25 half marathon the Great North Run. So presumably you felt in pretty good shape, but the Frankfurt Marathon didn't go to plan, unfortunately, as you had to pull out. Is that right?
Yeah. So basically, so going back to that, to be honest, in the block when I ran, because I did Cardiff 10K the week before the half, and I ran 30:21, which was at a PB at the time. And then the week after that, I was, to be honest, amazed at what I ran at the Great North. So I pretty much went through 10K in the same time I ran at Cardiff and then ran it again. So anything that happened at Frankfurt, I knew that the block had been a success just from that half.
Yeah.
But I think, to be honest, I was in good half marathon shape. I don't think I was ever in great marathon shape. And I went to Hawaii. My dad was doing the World Championships for the Ironman. So I went there for 3 weeks and I probably trained quite hard the first week or 2 weeks. And I don't know if I burnt myself out or what, but I definitely hadn't practiced enough of my drinks before the actual race. So basically, I remember Aaron saying to me at 10K, how do you feel? And I just said, my stomach is not good. And I remember the gel I took on at 20K was in my mouth for 5K and I just could not swallow it. And then I think it was about 25K. I said to him, I was like, I need water. And there was water on the side of the road he was on, and he managed to try and get me some water. He said to me afterwards, he was like, I knew you were done as soon as he said that to me. But about 27K, I was sick and I started to run again. And my hip flexors were just like shot. So I just stopped it. And I say unfortunately, but probably in hindsight, fortunately, it was exactly where the pacers were stopping to get picked up. So I was like, I'll jump back in that car.
So then did you take like lessons forward from that to London this year?
For sure, yeah. So definitely I knew I was probably, my sessions probably weren't long enough and probably weren't specific enough. So like I said, I was in really, really good half marathon shape. But I think the main thing was I wasn't practicing my nutrition enough. So I was trying, I was probably having like a gel on a long run and like maybe a bit of a drink, but like the last block, I've probably been doing that 3 times a week.
Yeah.
And like 3 gels on my long runs. So I was, a lot better prepared.
Yeah. And then you were entered to run London in April as well, were you?
Yes, I was, yeah.
Yeah. So what were your like reactions when that got postponed? Were you like ready to go in good shape or?
Yeah, I was in pretty good shape. So Aaron and I were in Portugal. That must have been March time, I think. We came back. I actually ended up, so it got cancelled when we were there. So I was like, there was talks of an Olympic trials race. So I was like, well, we'll keep training. If we get a race, we get a race. And then I got a bit of a niggle actually on the last day. So I had a couple of days off. And then I was like, there's no point doing an Olympic trials race. So my motivation went from being very, very high and I was in really, really good shape. So I don't think I ran for 2 weeks and then sort of did very minimal for another 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It went from very high to very low.
Yeah, I can imagine. So then the UK went into lockdown. What was your experience of lockdown like training wise? Once you knew there was potentially races on the horizon, did you start to ramp things back up again?
So it was quite odd actually at the beginning of lockdown because I moved from Bedford to Cardiff. So as soon as I was planning on moving anyway, I had a new job lined up. And I had two more weeks at my old job, but I realized that it looked like we're going to go to lockdown. So I moved all my things and sort of did my last 2 weeks working remotely from Cardiff. But for the first, I can't remember off the top of my head, but for about 6 weeks, I did sort of really minimal running. And I was like, right, I'm going to do, I did a time trial. I think it was in April. 5K time trial just went on the parkrun loop in Cardiff. And I knew I'd run in November. I did that twice. So I knew it's like a really quick course. And I ran 15:40 and I was absolutely flat out. So I wasn't in shape at all. And then I was like, right, okay. I sort of started to hear that London was going to be in October. And I was like, I need to sort of get myself into a position where I can actually start doing the training block. So I definitely started to ramp up a bit. I must have been probably 14 weeks before London. And then, just the normal sort of 12-week build up really from there.
Yeah. So then, as you said, in lockdown, you moved to Cardiff and you live with Jane Esbitt, who we also obviously know very well. How was it living like with another athlete, particularly in lockdown, when there was nothing else to do but train?
So I think Jen probably struggled more than me. I personally sort of quite enjoyed lockdown. There's definitely been times where it's like, oh, I can't be asked to go for a run. And she's pretty good at getting me out to go for runs, either if it's going with her or just sort of making me go. But yeah, no, it's been pretty good, to be honest.
Yeah. Now, I found that I had a danger of like overtraining because there was nothing else to do but train. There was no races to take before.
Yeah.
It was just train. So I was always trying to avoid that, really. You then raced twice before London. You did a 10K and a half marathon where you ran 30, 34 and 66 dead, respectively. Were those races all about just getting in race shape for London and see what shape you were in post-lockdown?
Definitely the half. The 10K was probably more, I think a few of us just went out to Ireland to race. So I thought I'll do that. And I sort of did it more probably as a session. So I did 10K after that as well. And I just kind of to see what shape I was in, really. I just didn't really have an idea. I mean, the course, it was, in reality, we probably could have done it in Cardiff because I think there was three of us, James Hunt and Paul Graham. We were probably, I think, like 2 minutes here of everybody else. And we all live like not a million miles away, probably within 5 miles of each other. But yeah, no, it was pretty windy there. So I thought I was in probably about 30-30 shape. I thought with the half marathon in Antrim, I thought I was probably in better shape than that. And I think I just got on my, I was on my own from about 4 miles. So that was that was a pretty lonely day, to be honest.
And because you'd ran a half marathon, like we said, before Frankfurt as well, how important do you think before a marathon doing some shorter races, building up to it, how important do you think that is?
I think definitely being in good shape, like 10K half marathon shape before the block, the actual marathon specific block is like quite important. But I personally just quite like getting out and racing as well. I think for me at Antrim, I could have run, I mean, I thought I was probably in low 64 minute shape. So I think if you go into a race, you run fast, you're going to get confidence boost because you run fast. Yeah. And if you sort of, when I ran 66 minutes, everyone just said, well, you're not training for a half marathon, so it doesn't matter. I think there's no, unless it was an absolute disaster, I think there's no sort of cons to it, really.
Yeah. And you mentioned doing like a 12-week marathon block. During that like marathon block, what does your typical week look like in terms of mileage, S&C sessions? What's your...
So when I moved to Cardiff, so I was previously being coached by Marcus Simon Goodwin in Bedford. And then when I moved, I wasn't really sure who I wanted to coach me. So I sort of started doing things with Matt Klaus. So I started doing sessions with him. So he sort of helped me a lot up into London. So he's basically been sort of setting my training, really. So one thing I was doing before was probably a bit more mileage. So I've cut down my mileage now. So I think before London in April, I probably got to about 120 miles a week. So I've cut down. I don't think I went over. I think my biggest week was 98 before London. And I probably averaged sort of 95. So I genuinely felt like I was running so much less. And my sessions have started to be a lot longer now, really. So a normal week, probably Monday, I'd probably do 8 and 5. Do a session. So normally we do a session on a Tuesday and a Friday and then do a steady long run, or on a Sunday, and then, or the week after, I do a session on the Wednesday and a session on the Saturday, and I have an easy Sunday. So it's kind of like a 2 week block. But my long runs were a lot harder when they were sessions. So that's probably the biggest difference I did from before. I was probably averaging about a nice 5 miles a week. S&C I've sort of just started now, really. It's not something I've ever done before.
But unlike quite a lot of the top athletes, you're quite active on Strava as well, aren't you? Why is that? Why do you like putting your training out there for others to see?
to be honest, I think it's probably more, why don't people like what they do? Like other people seeing. To me, it makes no difference.
Yeah, no, I'm the same.
It's something I've always done, so why hide it?
Yeah, absolutely. So then, like we said, you raced the London Elite Marathon on the lapped course at St. James's Park. How do you find the laps compared to a normal course, a looped course?
To be honest, I quite liked it. You always knew, I mean, the only thing I struggled with was how far into the race you were, because they had basically had kilometre markers and mile markers, and that was fine when you were sort of 1, 2, 3 laps in, but then when sort of my GPS was going out, and I had no idea where I was, so I ended up starting to just look how many laps to go there were. It was really good for drinks as well, because so you could basically take a drink every, I think it was every 2.1k, something like that. And if you didn't want your drink that lap, you could just take it the next lap. So I can remember there was one where my stomach felt a bit sort of full, so I just missed it and had it the next lap, which was, it was really good. So yeah, I personally actually preferred it.
It's interesting to say that actually, because when I was watching the coverage, it looked like there were just mile and kilometre markers everywhere with different numbers. I can make sense of it.
Yeah, I had no idea where I was. So I thought, I basically looked at my watch. I was like, I've got 45 minutes roughly to go. I was like, now it's sort of starting to hurt a bit.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I mean, the first half, I just didn't even look. I just thought, I just keep running.
Yeah. Well, having GPS out that much as well actually must be annoying, because I saw on Strava a couple of runners that did it. It was showing like 27 and a half, 28 miles, just because of the nature of the course.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I wasn't really looking at my splits. So they had a scoreboard at the start finish line. And that had your predicted time on. So I was pretty much just running off feel. And as long as that start finish time didn't get sort of too fast, or, I mean, if it's starting to get too slow, I mean, and you feel like you're working, there's no point picking it up anyway, because you're just going to sort of suffer in the end. So as long as I didn't pick up too much, I was quite happy just running on feel.
Yeah. So
that's kind of sort of how I run it.
And how did you find all the COVID regulations? You had like things around your necks for a few days, didn't you?
Yeah, that was pretty annoying. It was more annoying because Jenny and I were sharing a room. So ours was sort of just going off constantly, because we were obviously next to each other the whole time.
Yeah.
So it was a bit annoying. We had a test on the Monday, and then on the day we got there.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then we could race. So.
Yeah, exactly. And did you miss the crowds? You hadn't done London before, but I'm sure.
Yeah, I went with my pace there before, like, coming, like, there's Cutty Sark, which is, I cannot remember when I paced there with Mike. I can remember having goosebumps going around there, because the noise is just crazy. And sort of the same coming off Tower Bridge. So yeah, it was a shame there wasn't any crowds. That would have been nice. Especially the second sort of the later stages. So hopefully next year.
Yeah, hopefully. What was your aim going into the race? You ran 2:17:59. Were you pleased with that?
I think for my sort of the first one I finished, I think I sort of have to be pleased with that. To be honest, I was aiming sort of, the plan was always to try and run sort of 68 minutes through half. Matt sort of said aim for sort of 68:30, but I was kind of like, I want to do sort of 68. So that was a debate we had. And the conditions weren't great going sort of in the morning. I basically spoke to him, and he sort of said, if it's not great, like, be confident enough to sort of back off that time. Don't worry about it. So I knew there was a sort of a group of us, like Aaron, Dan Nash, Paul Martelletti. So I basically sort of said 68:15, 68:30 in the morning, and sort of see how we go from there. So yeah, I mean, I was always aiming sort of for 2:16, 2:17. It was just the last 10K. I think the quickest my predicted time got down to was about 2:16 flat, maybe 2:16:05, and then the last 10K really sort of started to hurt.
Yeah, I think you said on your Instagram post that the last 30-35 minutes were probably the hardest you've ever run.
Yeah, I can remember conversations I've had with Aaron before, and I could never comprehend how much it hurts until you actually do it.
Yeah,
I've always sort of taken the mick out of him. Like, you're just, it's only sort of, you can surely run 5:15s at the end of, No, I can't.
But yeah, like I've obviously never run a marathon either, and everyone says you get to 20 miles and then it's like a whole different thing. And I've thought, well, it can't be that much different. But yeah, it sounds like once you go past that limit, it's just pain from there.
Yeah, I mean, I'd done quite a few. I think I've probably done three long runs, which are sort of 20, 21 miles. And I averaged, they were pretty quick. So I was pretty confident going into it. I was like, I won't slow. To be honest, when we said what my plan was to halfway, I was always trying to plan to pick up it from 20 miles. But yeah, it was just, I don't know if it was a combination of like the conditions as well, because it was quite cold. But I was sort of really, really suffering.
So you said after Frankfurt, you learned about like how you train differently and nutrition, hydration. What have you learned from this marathon that you've taken to your next one?
One thing I want to try is, so we were trying with my nutrition. So I've been used Morton. So they helped me out, which is really good. But I was trying the 160. Which is sort of a bit lighter, but less carbs, and so it's a bit easier to drink. So I think I'm going to try the 320 for my next one, because I don't know if I sort of suffered a bit because I was sort of just lacking the carbs at the end, but yeah, it's worth trying. So that's definitely one thing. I'm gonna try and do some S&C. So I sort of started basically I had a 2 weeks 2 weeks off after London, so I started getting in the gym, because some of the stuff I sort of started, I'm so weak. They're the main sort of things, really. And then trying to get some a bit faster over a half marathon and 10K.
Yeah. So how has that post-marathon downtime been? Like, how long did it take you to recover, and what have you been doing since London?
The first few days, so I'm basically sat now where I work now, because I'm working from home. And I honestly could not get up from the chair without pushing myself up. So my quads were absolutely destroyed. And that probably lasted 3 to 4 days. But I mean, there's not really much to do at the moment. So I was pretty much just staying at home anyway. Just sort of chilling out, really. And then I started running. I think I probably had like 13 days off. And I think I ran the Sunday 2 weeks after. But I did a few, just really, really easy runs. Sort of just starting to build up now.
Yeah. How do you find fitting in training around work? How long do you work a day, and does training, is it hard to fit in, or are you all right with that?
So with lockdown, it's better because I've been working from home. So it's quite funny, actually. I've never actually been to my new office, which is quite weird. So I've been working for this company since the beginning of April. And I've met the people that were there once, because we sort of had a team too. Everything's over Microsoft Teams. I normally, depending when I was sort of doing the bigger mileage, I was probably getting up at not even that early. I think the earliest I was getting up was when Matt Klaus was still living in, and we do sessions, and he would sort of be adamant we'd be doing the session in the morning before work, and I was probably getting up at 5:30 then, because he wanted to just sort of warm up at 6. I was like, but if I'm training on my own, I'll definitely do the sessions in the evening. So probably I don't really get up earlier than 7, and I'll run straight from work pretty much. So I work 9 till 5, half an hour lunch, Monday to Friday.
I follow Matt Klaus on Strava, actually, and he's gearing up for Valencia, is that right?
Yes, yeah, I can't be long now, probably another month.
So what's next for you in terms of marathon? Obviously, there's the British Olympic Trials in March next year, isn't there? Is that on your radar, or what? Well, yeah, what's
so first thing I'm hoping to do a 10K in France at the end of December, but I'm sort of dubious that's going to actually happen. So sort of, yeah, play it by ear with that. But I was in two minds with the trials, but I think I'm probably not going to do them. I think if realistically you think you can make the team, then it's great. But I'm not going to make the team. So it's going to be another build up, and then it's going to be another build up where I'm not doing sort of focusing on the stuff that I think will help my marathon. So I don't think it's something that will help me in the long run, to be honest.
So you think you'll do London next year? Is that?
Yeah, I that would be much more of a plan. So I would probably want to try and do some 10Ks and half marathons, sort of, yeah, February, March sort of time. And probably go back and do some 5Ks on the track in the summer. And then, yeah, do London next year. That would be the plan.
Hopefully it'll be, yeah, with crowds and the normal London by then as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that'd be really good.
So there's a few questions we ask at the end of every interview, some quick fire stuff. So if you could go for a run with any athletes, runner or otherwise, dead or alive, who would it be?
I'd probably say Matt Centrovitz.
Yeah,
he's pretty funny. I've actually been playing a bit of Call of Duty with him. So he's quite funny.
Yeah, I've seen from your Instagram, it looks like you're pretty into your Call of Duty.
Yeah, I probably play too much. Jen would definitely say so anyway.
Yeah. If you could only compete in one race a year, so not distance, but actual events, which one would that be?
I'd probably say London Marathon, to be honest. Yeah, I think it's definitely being British is the biggest event in the country. And yeah, it works that distance as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've done the mini marathon a few times, and yeah, it's pretty cool running down the mile. Yeah.
Crowds are just crazy.
Yeah. What's your favourite session?
I'm going to go. Can I do two? One to the other. So one of the sessions they used to do when I was at Bedford was like a 1500 session. So two sets of 300, 400, 400, 300, 200. And the recovery was pretty short between, so basically your recovery was whatever you ran the rep before, with 8 minutes between sets. So that was sort of the really quick, that was probably the quickest session I'll ever do.
Yeah.
And then the other extreme, I mean, one of the ones I did before London was 4x4 miles with a mile float. I do like the float sessions. They seem to suit me quite well.
Yeah, I like them as well. They're my favorite. I mean, they're horrible, but yeah.
Look good on Strava as
definitely
well.
Get you fit. Ben, what's your least favorite session? Sometimes it's never the same, I suppose.
I can think of the one that's coming back to my mind is I did a session with Matt around the park, and we did 2 minutes. Two minutes basically hard, which, I mean, my hard and his hard are very, very different. It's like a 100-meter sprint. But we had 45-second recovery, which was float. And that was just, yeah, it was awful, to be honest.
Yeah.
You finish and your recovery's done.
Yeah,
it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, sounds pretty rough. Do you have go-to music that you listen to before a race or session or either? Yeah.
I mean, I pretty much shuffle a lot of, I just go on and sort of shuffle in Spotify, really. There's nothing specific, I'd say. One run I did, it was just like a steady 22 miles, and I had to take Jen's iPod because I didn't have a pocket for my phone. And it's like a old iPod shuffle from, it must be like 10 years old, and some of the songs on that were horrific. So for like 2.5 hours, that was probably, yeah, awful.
Do you have doesn't have to be running related, but like a book or TV, Netflix recommendation at all?
To be honest, I don't really watch TV. Most of my free time, I just end up playing on my computer. So yeah. If you're going to do anything, download Warzone.
And split shorts or half tights?
It depends what time of year. So I raced London this year in half tights, but a lot of the time I would go split shorts. So yeah, very weather dependent. Summer was, say, split shorts, winter definitely half tights.
Yeah, I've always been split shorts, but it seems like all the world records are going half tights at the moment, so maybe I'm missing out. And where can people find you on social media, Strava, Instagram, Twitter, if they want to follow you?
So I'm pretty sure my Twitter and my Instagram is Josh_Lunn. Facebook, yeah, just Josh Lunn. Anything else? Twitch?
Yeah. Twitch, yeah. Strava as well.
Strava, yeah, it's probably just my name. Yeah, I'm not private or anything, so yeah, feel free to follow.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for your time. It's been fascinating to hear, particularly about the London experience. And yeah, best of luck with your next marathon build up.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you.